That's a literal snot rat. That's a literal snot rat.
It is a literal snot rat.
Oh, hey, man.
Like, I don't, I'm not a big fan of using tissue paper or anything. But
wait, can I ask why? Is it because it's wasteful?
Yeah.
Okay.
It is, you know, wasteful. Guys used to carry hankies.
Yeah. Right? That's fair. Yeah, no, absolutely.
I actually have embroidered hankies, but like,
I have one embroidered hanky.
Jordan bought them for me for like Christmas.
Really? So I have, full disclosure, I learned this in New York from like October, no. From April to October, I would carry one of these around. Just, you know, more because, you know, I'm a bigger dude. You sweat.
Welcome to Savannah, bud. That's, I know. You're going to need a bar towel in your pocket at all times. That's not going to cut it. It's not going to cut it.
Man.
It's not. I know.
That sucks.
Guys, I like that. So, welcome to Beyond the Check Service Industry Podcast. Woo! I'm Rashawn Parker. If you get a chance, please go watch season one of my cooking show, Beyond the Check Worker Owner Edition, where I go hang out and work around or restaurants and find out about the chef's lives, the history of the restaurant, and then of course cook up and try some of the best dishes they have to offer. I have one of the coolest dudes I've met in a little while. He's actually from one of the restaurants featured on season two, Seawolf out on Tybee Island. I think he also bartends at their sister establishment, Lone Wolf.
Absolutely.
Downtown Savannah. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to fuck it up. Ryan Scamenti.
You were super. No, you had it. It's Ryan Scamenti.
Scamenti.
And good to see you, man. Pleasure.
You too, man.
Fuck yeah.
Thanks for being
Can
here.
Can I curse?
You fucking cuss all you want, bud.
Oh, thank Christ.
I don't care. You know what I haven't figured out, though, is do I need to put explicit content click on
when
does cussing count, or is it just like bloody murder sexual weird things? Like, what counts as explicit content nowadays?
I think I did for mine, for sure.
Yeah,
so just because I curse like a motherfucker.
Hey guys, if I haven't clicked the explicit content and I fucking cuss, I'm super sorry. Kids,
oh, just wait. Wait in the comment section. It's probably already happened to you, but I had people, like, I interviewed this guy, Jason Faulkner, from the band Jellyfish. He's played with Beck and a few, this band Air, for a long time. And I interviewed him, and I put it on YouTube, and the comments, people were like, I can't even listen to this interview because of all the fucking they wouldn't say fucking, dare they say cursing, because of all the cursing. And I was like, I was younger too, and I was like, come on, man. Like, the content's good. I mean, so I say fuck every once in a while.
Right?
Eat a dick, dude. Yeah. So,
like, you can say, I'm pretty sure you can say fuck on television now.
Oh, like,
after like 11.
First of all, it's also 2021. Like, let's all just, you know, come on.
Right. Though, granted, I was a playwright, like, my undergrad. Sure. And so, yeah, I put a lot of fucking good. Tarantino was huge right then.
Yeah.
Right? Like, so everything was fucking cussing. And so I did used to, you know, but I learned that it's more powerful in sparsity.
It is. That's true. Mm-hmm. That's true. Can I ask you a question, and not to interview you here, but as a playwright.
Nobody ever interviews me.
We'll talk about that later. But, okay. Who are some of your people as a playwright? Like, who are some people you took to or made you want to do that, I should say?
Oh, man, what made me want to be a playwright? I think I ended up as a playwright because I wanted to be an actor.
Okay.
And I didn't make it into the acting program. So I was like, oh, I guess I'll be a playwright. And actually, thank God, because like, the actors had it so rough, and those playwrights just like kicked it. And, like,
Tennessee Williams just got to drink himself to death.
Tennessee Williams on the top. I love Waiting for Godot.
Oh, yeah, fuck yeah.
I would love to be able to like spoof Waiting for Godot, but you will get sued until Kingdom Come if touch it with a 10-foot pole. But man, I did put, there's some hints. We have a screenplay that hasn't been made called X Eve,
okay,
which is Christmas Eve in a bar. And there's I have some Waiting for Godot references in there with these guys. The two dudes are just sitting at the bar waiting for their weed man.
Uh-huh.
And they're like, man, should we wait or should we just Godot? And they're just like, oh, no, hold on. And like, no, we're just gonna Godot. The bartender's like, sure, you don't want another round? I'm like, okay, sure, give us another round. And sure. Then they just stay and keep waiting for the weed man. I'm like, hey, I don't know, should we get another round or should we just Godot? It just keeps happening, right?
Totally.
So, I don't know if that's copyright infringement at all, because it's really just a sleight of tongue. Just, I don't know. Should we stay or should we go?
Yeah, I think it might actually be all right. The jury's still out on that one. You let me know it works out.
I haven't made the movie yet. We'll find out.
Fuck yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. I can talk about like play stuff all the time. I'm a big Sam Shepard fan, and obviously.
He loves some Shepard.
Yeah, he's good. He's a good one, man.
I mean, I honestly liked all the old Greek tragedies. Like,
oh, dude. Oedipus. Sure. Of course, man. Absolutely.
You know, everybody dies and there's a hand of God that comes out and saves everybody at the end.
Yeah. And
or everybody just dies and nothing good happens.
Yeah.
Like, that happened a lot.
No, it sure did, man.
all the twisted Shakespeare plays, like just putting spins on those. Like,
oh, yeah, Comedy of
Errors.
Yeah.
Comedy of Errors is probably one of my faves.
No shit. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't think I ever actually went through that one.
Okay. So here's the thing. If you're like, I would like to be into Shakespeare, but it's so hard. The BBC, this is how I cheated through college with Shakespeare. The BBC has word for word creations of every Shakespeare play ever. So you can watch them instead of having to read them.
Okay.
Because it's literally verbatim.
Right.
They made verbatim
Shakespeare.
And so then it makes sense because you're like, oh, because you can see them talking.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And their inflections. Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. And so you're like, okay, that makes sense now. I get it.
Yeah.
Because like as a kid, they're trying to make kids read Shakespeare at like 13 years old.
Yeah. No, and it's not going to. No, I hear you.
They haven't even mastered slang yet.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's true. That's true, man. No, that's a tough one. I could never get down with Shakespeare. As much as I respect it and understand why it's brilliant, I'm just it like just flies so far, you know.
It's the plot structure that I think I always liked. Like, it's not how they speak or anything.
Sure.
Like, I don't give a shit about really all your cuckolds and your, I mean, don't get me wrong. Who doesn't like to be cuckolded?
Everybody likes a good cuckold every now and again.
You know, but the structure, right, you know, was always really good.
Yeah.
The way stories combine and intertwine. And
sure.
He didn't really play with time that much.
I guess like, that's you true. Know. Yeah.
But still, you can take any of those story structures and then fuck with time. And then you get, you know, Shakespeare with a twist.
Yeah. And back to Tarantino. Boom, boom.
And back to Tarantino.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sweet.
So, yeah. Well, do you go to a lot of plays in New York? Broadway a lot?
You know what's really interesting, man? I actually listened to an interview with Ethan Hawke. And I used to go, like, once in a while, but I listened to this interview with Ethan Hawke a couple years ago, and he was talking about it, like, specifically plays. Obviously, the guy's been in a million movies and shit.
He's been on stage a lot, too.
Yeah, and I guess I just didn't realize
that. And a lot of his little, like, smaller indie films were plays.
That's true.
Right?
That's
like, what's that one in the room with him and, like, one of the Wilson brothers?
Fuck me. I'm not going to get it.
It's him and Uma Thurman.
Yeah, because they were married.
And,
that's right.
And Luke Wilson.
Yep. Nope. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to know.
I know what you're talking about. It's not called The Room.
No. That's something else that's very special.
But it's a really good movie.
Yeah,
and it all takes place in that hotel room, which I'm pretty sure
he's like a wizard, man. Like as a musician, you know, I play guitar, I sing and stuff like that. And when you do that, you have an instrument in front of you to kind of block you from the audience, so you feel like there is a literal barrier, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And like with
a stuff safety
like,
blanket,
yeah, and I know you do stand up and stuff like that. Like with stand up, or certainly with plays, when you're there's nothing like that, and you're interacting with other people, and then you have this live audience here, where you really have that's such a crazy dynamic to me, man. And that's why I just had a new respect for it. So yes, I went to a bunch of plays the last couple years. I was in New York. I saw John Lithgow and Laurie Metcalf do that Hillary Clinton play that was incredible. I saw Jeff Daniels do To Kill a Mockingbird, which was restructured by Aaron Sorkin.
Oh, what?
It was incredible, dude. Nice. It was so incredible, man.
I'd like to see that.
It was really good. I'm from New York my whole life, so, you know, I like the culture every now and then. I like, and I think I said this in the, you know, when we were talking back at Seawolf, like, I like highbrow and lowbrow things. You know, I have, dive bars are great, cocktail bars are great, you know, like, shit movies are great, you know, like, highbrow, you know, cinema verte is great too, you know, whatever, so.
Like, you wouldn't mind seeing Leonardo DiCaprio play, like, Death of a Salesman.
No, that would probably be fucking awesome, actually. That would probably be really awesome.
Highbrow, lowbrow.
Yeah, man, or, you know. Or, you know, yeah, who knows? Who's to know?
Because when's the last time they put Death of a Salesman on Broadway?
God, I feel like they do it pretty regularly.
Off-Broadway? I bet probably it's on off-Broadway a lot.
You know, it is probably off-Broadway.
Probably a lot.
Yeah.
One of my favorite plays, actually, I saw in New York City off-Broadway, which was an Inspector Calls.
I don't know that one.
Oh, man, it was so good. They had,
who wrote it?
I'm not sure who wrote it. We have to look it up.
That's okay.
But an Inspector Calls, there's a movie on Netflix or... I think it's Netflix.
Okay.
Could be Hulu, could be Amazon. I don't know. Inspector Calls that they made into a movie.
Mm-hmm.
But when I saw it, they had built this house up on the stage, and it was on stilts, and they also made it rain on stage.
Oh, fuck yeah.
It's your classic murder mystery.
Yeah.
Inspector comes to the house and whatever. But I have a plate. I have a piece of one of the plates because the house crashes at one point,
and
all
cool.
the plates break, and then they sell them as like little souvenirs, autographed like.
Oh, that's really
people, dude, that's people really, left.
I'm also fascinated, man. I'm, like with like stage production and stuff. You know, I do like event production stuff sometimes too. But even like, you know, back in New York, I would go to the opera. I would go to punk rock shows, like everything. But you go to, you see an opera or something like that, and the stages are so interesting. I saw one once. It wasn't Turandot, but it was something else. But they like everything like burned up at the end, was on fire. It was like, how the fuck did they just do that in an opera house? Like, I do not. And like, so that stuff is always so cool to me when like, you know, it's taken to another level. Like
I saw Sunset Boulevard on Broadway. I actually got Glenn Close's signature when we were autographed on my ticket stub because I was too cheap to buy a playbill or like one of like the magazine things. You know, I was like 15 years old. I was a school trip, like high school trip to New York.
That's awesome.
And but they had a pool. They had a whole pool that like the stage opened up and there was a whole pool for the dude to fall in and die at the end.
Sure. Yeah, God, it's that stuff is so interesting to me. How they could do it. Yeah. I just saw Hedwig and the Angry Inch. Just so it feels like it was 2 minutes ago, but it was probably like 8 years ago.
Wow, I forgot all about that.
Dude, I saw it 4 times on Broadway. I saw Neil Patrick Harris, which was great. I love the movie, obviously. I saw Michael C. Hall and then twice with John Cameron Michael. Is it Michael or Mitchell? I always forget. But it was incredible. But that stage show was nuts.
I took like a gay and lesbian cinema class in that movie, my undergrad.
Is so good.
A lot of Hedwig and the Angry Inch.
Oh, the music is great. The story is great. It's basically a Greek tragedy. You know what I mean? I mean, it's the music is fantastic. And like, he's just a really smart motherfucker too. He's and both of them, him and Stephen Trask, the guy that wrote the music, they're just fantastic. Like, they write great shit. Who doesn't
write great shit?
God, I could talk about this stuff all day long.
I have a musical.
Do you really?
Well, it's, you can actually watch the whole stage performance that was put, the actors weren't great. I didn't have anything to do with it. Somebody else put it up.
Okay.
But yeah, it's called Strike, an Appalachian comedy about a family whose dad goes on strike from the steel mill.
Okay.
And mom has to go work at like the steak hut.
Uh-huh.
And wait tables. And the kids, you know, the son like plays football and he's smoking weed and fucking whatever.
Yeah.
And the daughter's like all promiscuous and drinking and like, you know, sneaking out of the house. And eventually he decides he's going to win a chili contest to save the trailer.
Okay.
I don't want to ruin the end, but
I need to get these babies right on that.
It's on YouTube. You can watch the whole thing. You can watch the whole thing.
I don't know what I'm doing tonight.
Strike, an Appalachian comedy. Not the best performances, but you'll get the gist of it.
Yeah. So you typically talk about like just service stuff or it goes wherever you want it to
talk about whatever we want.
Oh, God.
Did I not say that in the beginning? I usually say that. Like, hey, welcome to the Service Industry Podcast, where we talk about service industry stuff and basically whatever we want to.
Okay. That's fair.
Yeah.
That's whatever, fair.
Man.
Hey, man.
It's cool.
The service industry thing is, like, blowing my mind. Like, I've only been doing it for a couple months, and I've, like, really been enjoying it. Like, really, really been enjoying it.
Okay. So, since the episode's not out yet, you'll learn more about Ryan if you watch season 2 of Beyond the Check, coming to Amazon Prime in June.
God, that was well placed, man. Good, but it was like a tennis player right in the back corner.
But Ryan did just move here from New York City to leave a teaching job or an administrator?
So it was a little bit of both. I was working at a college called Five Towns College. It's a great place that teaches theater, music, audio. They have a gaming program. They have a music business program, a lot of stuff like that. And I was doing career development. I was doing a podcast there. I was helping them do events. I didn't get to teaching there, but I was hired because I taught
the Ryan of all trades.
You know, but you have no. I mean, it's layered. But I also, I taught audio for about 10 years at a place called SAE, which they have one in Atlanta here, SAE Institute. And I also taught at a school called the Institute of Audio Research that closed in 2017. But I taught music theory, basic digital editing. What else? Basically,
cool kid stuff.
It was, yeah. And like how to like not be a dick in the music industry. That wasn't the name of the class. It would be hilarious if it was, but just how to conduct yourself professionally in that kind of environment.
You can put it on your podcast in a whole episode called how to not be a dick. Make it a series. A short series.
We could make it a lifetime, really. Cause fuck, people do not know how to do that shit. But so I think
that's most industries, really.
Like, oh, that's true. Oh, 100%. No,
there's always some. Just human beings in general.
Oh, dude, you've worked in service for a long time. And,
I don't know, 30%? Yeah, dicks?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that's a fair number.
30%?
Yeah, 30%.
About a third of all human beings are just dicks.
I don't know. You know what's interesting to me, man, is the front of house, back of house thing. And actually, at Seawolf, it's actually pretty level, man. Like, we have some great people there. I'm shocked, but it's such a different environment. And that's
everyone just seems cool and like we're just all working together. We're doing this thing and we're going to go home later.
It is that, you know. But whereas you go into other places, and I've dated people who've worked in the service industry, you see like this very different dynamic between, and I get it. They're two very different animals and like they're both incredibly difficult. And you have so many things you have to deal with. Like,
I mean, in all honesty, I think most cooks really get the short end of the stick.
I'm not going to disagree with that. Because and they're fucking really talented people.
And they're back there sweating their ass. I mean, don't get me wrong. It is hard to run around a restaurant and keep track of a million people's fucking needs and wants.
Yeah.
But it's also hot in the kitchen. Yeah. And you're getting paid hourly.
Yeah.
Which is good in slow times, I suppose.
Exactly. But when the fucking people comparatively are crushing speaking, it with tips,
like, you know, that, it, man. You know, you're making a third of what the people on the floor are making.
Yeah.
It's got to get a little disgruntled at certain points. But again, you chose that profession.
Right.
So.
Right. And I can't do that shit. I mean, I love. But
that
cook,
doesn't mean like, that it's not fair. The profession itself, probably, you know, like,
yeah,
something needs something.
Are you terrified at all about the Biden? I don't mean to get political. It's not a political thing, but the Biden thing about the doing away with the tipping thing.
Yeah, that's concerning.
It's a little scary, man. I was like, dude, what the fuck? I mean, you can't. I, you know, like how many places would like the? I think it would be one of those things where they did it for 6 months and the restaurant industry would collapse and they would realize like we can't do this. It's like,
yeah, and fit $15 an hour is not enough for people who are used to making between 20 and 30
exactly plus, or more. Yeah, with tips, you know, yeah, it can like, be crazy. Yeah, I agree.
No,
it's.
I think putting in a system where 20% was included into all menu prices, right? And then, you know, that's what you get.
Yeah.
I think that is a better option.
Yeah.
And then if people want to leave more, well, fucking go ahead and leave more. I ain't going to stop you.
Yeah.
Like there's a restaurant in Athens, Ohio called Casa Nueva, and it's all worker owned. Like everybody who works there is a part owner. Like you're on like trial for a little while and then you can become an
owner. That's cool.
Now, then you actually share in the revenue. There's like 30 plus people, I think, with all revenue share. But for them, they switched several years ago, like maybe even 5 years ago, to put it, just added the 20% into everything. The drink price, the food price, everything. Just had an extra bump in it.
Yeah.
And you don't notice.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But then they also have in the books that say, your, you know, tips have all been included.
Yeah.
If you'd like to leave more, this is the charity of the month.
Yeah.
And so any tips that are actually left over all went to whatever charity of the month was.
Yeah.
But otherwise, everybody,
that's cool, man.
Everybody split it, including the cooks. Including the servers, the bartenders, everybody who's just working for this. So the entire sales of the night go in thing, and then it's all just and divided amongst everybody who was working.
And I guess it's not as difficult for people coming from somewhere else where they're used to making the tip money. If they come here and they know after X amount of time I can possibly be an owner, and it's a thing. So I guess it does kind of balance.
Right, and then, so then you get, once you're there long enough, you get equity share in for sales for the month too, right? So.
That's cool, man. That's really cool. There's a restaurant in New York, one of my favorite.
But then everybody just feels like they're doing equal work.
Yeah.
And everybody doesn't do the same job. Everybody has to rotate. And sometimes you're a cook. Sometimes you're a bartender. Sometimes you're a server. Everybody has to know how to do everything.
Shit. Well, you know.
That's how they keep it fair.
Yeah.
Right?
So at Seawolf, I actually do. I do not cook by any means. But I as I mentioned.
But you're making the same amount of money no matter what job you're doing. I mean there.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Right. I see what you're saying. Yeah. But no, I think it's good to have people to try to be able to do as much. I mean, I do expediting, I serve, I bartend there, you know, and it's just like, and you have a real understanding of how everything really works, and you know, you're involved with the kitchen and so much. It's just, I don't know, it's very interesting to me. I'm just so excited to not be in education. I'm like, this is the coolest thing, and like people are like,
dude, like, I can make bad jokes.
I had a guy yesterday come in, man, and he wouldn't stop with the bad jokes. It was like one after another, and you know, dude, you've bartended, and it was like you try to be so nice, you're like, ha, 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 ha. And then like you have to, luckily I was like, I gotta go walk away and I got a thing.
Or sometimes people start telling you like bad jokes.
You're like, hey, dude, I don't think you're supposed to.
You can't say that anymore. Yeah, man. That's not, no, it's not allowed. Not to say it wasn't funny 2 years ago.
Yeah. But let me tell you what it's not now. Yeah, now it's gone, buddy. Yeah.
That lady over there is coming to punch you in the face, like right now.
Oh, yeah.
She's
gone. Oh, this guy was like, and like just not aware. You know, I'm a big fan of emotional intelligence, like, you know, understanding your surroundings and like, you know, reading the room. We've talked about this a little bit, right? You know, like, and like, that's important. And like, some people have none of that.
Zero
shit.
Filter.
Zero. And it's like,
what did I say?
Yeah. It's like, dude, if you want to be a dick, be a dick. Like, oh, cool. I'll respect that. But when you just aren't, you don't even. You're not even self-aware. Being self-aware is very important.
Self-aware is key.
Now let's talk about hygiene. but yeah, so it's crazy.
Soap is key.
Fuck yeah, man. I used to work in recording studios. Let me tell you what, a room this size
filled
with fucking musicians who like don't change. They buy a pair of Payless shoes.
Are we being musical bias right now?
No, I love musicians.
You're like, no, this is just a fact.
No, it is a fucking fact, dude. Like I used to have to tell kids like in the school, like, okay, guys, wear deodorant, brush your fucking teeth, and change your shoes every like 3 to 6 months because you don't want to be the smelly guy. You know, right. Like
nobody wants to be the smelly.
No,
guy.
Man. Like you look at those people in high school, they get the shit beat out of them. Like now, it won't happen. You just won't get money, and people don't want to like be around you. You know, like. Sucks, man. But people are just like, some people are.
Don't be a pig pen.
Don't be a pig pen, man. Unless it's the one from the dead. He was all right. I was cool with him.
All right, funny story. In middle school, in eighth grade, there's still one you had shop. I had shop class.
Me too.
And our fucking shop teacher smelled so bad all the time. That right before Christmas break one year, we all got together and bought a fucking case of deodorant. And left it on his desk right before Christmas break.
Okay, cruel, but necessary. Necessary, man.
Like, Please, man.
Was he really big?
He was really big.
So unfortunately, I think sometimes those people can't help it.
I don't think he was even trying. He wasn't even trying.
It's tough to tell. So I used to work with someone who was very large. And there was a certain odor.
Are we fat shaming?
No. It's God. I probably shouldn't say that. No, but like it was just a terrible thing. And like it was like, is this something you're? Is it because you're not showering, or is it because it's just a thing? You know, I'm a bigger dude. Like I get it. And I also bathe like once, sometimes twice, every now and again, thrice a day. So dare I say, but like
3 times a week.
Interesting. Four? All right. Okay.
Well, I got bad hips, so taking my socks on and off is okay. Real.
Listen, as long as you deal with the
undercarriage. If Jordan's not home, my right foot is not getting a sock put on it because still to this day, I don't have one of those little slippy foot things for old people.
Oh.
To put my sock on. And bones doesn't
help. Christmas gift ideas, guys. Christmas gift ideas.
I try to get the dog to hey, just hold the sock for me for a second. I just need to get it on my big toe. If I can get it on my big toe, I can get the rest of it on. But if I can't get it on the big toe, screw it.
Yeah.
No sock.
And back to fat shaming.
Okay.
It works. I just lost like 60 pounds, and I think it was really not that anybody like specific. I listened to people talk about fat shaming, and I was like, you know what? Fuck them. They're right. I'm a fat fuck. I gotta get the fuck over this, man. And like, so I was able to do it. So just to, you know.
So you're allowed. You're allowed.
I didn't see that coming. That was good. Yes, it's just like I'm Italian. I say all the horrible things about
you. You can talk with your hands.
I can gesticulate. I can use all the horrible words about myself. No. No, yes, I'm allowed. Thank you. God. I feel so much better.
Like card right here.
Yeah, that's right.
But no, maybe it wasn't his fault. I don't know. He never said anything about it.
So isn't it funny those things like from the Puritan life you remember? I had a woman, she was like one of the vice principals. She was terrified, this is going to blow your mind, of bananas. Like, and we thought it was bullshit until somebody was crazy enough to like the last day of senior year, bring in a crate of bananas, somehow get into her office and put them everywhere. No bullshit. I was walking down the hallway. No, I heard this lady scream in a way like it was blood curdling. And she freaked out. She was like slapping. This was back in the 90s when you can kind of slap a kid around a little bit. And yeah, she was like, get them out of my office. Like truly afraid of bananas. Who is that a thing?
Maybe she like something bad happened to her while like watching an episode of Banana Man or something when she was a kid.
Bananamon. It's
do you remember that?
No.
Does anybody remember Banana Man?
What's that?
Banana Man. It was a Saturday morning cartoon on like USA Cartoon Express, and he was a superhero called Banana Man.
I did not. Was he a banana?
Yeah.
Or
like,
banana?
Yeah, he wasn't like. Yeah, I gotta go back, man.
He's half Moon Man, half Banana Man, half phallic.
He didn't like turn into a banana, but like his cape was like yellow.
What was his superpower? Do you remember?
He could fly and just do all your basics. Superman kind
he
of gave, thing,
he delivers he potassium, Man. Potassium to everyone. Yeah.
And like, it wasn't like a spoof, like commercially. It was an actual
really. Oh, show. I remember that one, man. Okay, you know what? One of my favorites was I love that we're going down this road. Camp Candy, really?
Oh man, I love Camp Candy.
Yeah, because John Candy,
the cartoon one.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Dude. I feel like we are the one thing the world is missing. Now we're missing a few things. We're missing a guy like Bill Hicks. We're which we talked about. And John Candy, like John Candy, like dude, you God, know those he, things are so still hold up so well.
What's the camping one or the wilderness one?
The Great Outdoors.
Yeah. The Great Outdoors. Yeah.
Oh, that's a great. That
planes, trains, and automobiles.
Dude, even his Home Alone. Even that few minutes in Home Alone, he is so good. You know, he got paid.
Mog.
My personal Spaceballs. Favorite. Armed and Dangerous, dude, with Eugene Levy. That is so good.
Oh, I literally say,
I got my Christmas goose early. Like on the regular, dude, because that movie and Meg Ryan's in that. That's a great movie.
Here's John Candy,
dude. Mm-hmm. Amen to John Candy, my friend. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Him and Chris Farley are doing rails right now,
dude. Yeah, but they are, man. You know, I'm a big I'm a big Ween fan, as I mentioned to you in our interview, and I think Ween they dedicated their album Chocolate and Cheese to John Candy because he died like right around the time they were putting it out.
Yeah. I've told this story before, but I shook Chris Farley's hand in New York City outside of Planet Hollywood.
Dude,
in that same
here.
New York trip.
Yeah. No kidding.
Said I'd never wash my hand ever again.
Dude, Glenn Close and Chris Farley in the city. That's a good New York trip.
Yeah. It wasn't bad.
How old were you when you at the time?
Like 15?
Dude, that's
cuz that's it was like, right when Tommy Boy had come out, so.
God damn, man.
That would have been like 1995 would have been 1995.
I mean, I've had great celebrity sightings in New York. Just being from New York, it's going to happen. But like, to just be there for a little while to get those two, that's crazy. And now in retrospect, Farley, that's nuts, man.
Yeah, I didn't register to me really at the time because I wasn't that into Saturday Night Live right at the time.
Yeah,
and I didn't think that I liked Tommy Boy.
Dude, I love when I'm a big.
But looking back, I'm like, I shook Chris Farley's hand.
Fuck yeah, no, that's a huge deal, dude. When I was 9 years old, my stepdad, he's a big Beatles fan of the Beatles, and we would go to like Beatle conventions in New Jersey because I was a big music person. And I saw Harry Nilsson like right before he died. Like most people only know him for like One Is the Loneliest Number or, you know, Put the Lime in the Coconut. But like, and so at the time I didn't really care. But now, like, as a huge music person, I'm a huge Nilsson fan. Yeah. And I was like, dude, I fucking saw Harry Nilsson.
Guy.
It's scary. Like, I can go places that, yeah.
You'll meet a lot of celebrities in Savannah too, or at least you used to.
That's what I've heard, man.
Not as much anymore since the publicist guy who used to run SCAD Film Festival.
Is that right?
Not run it, but like would get the people. They had a falling out. So,
is that right? I get just because of all the filming though that you'd see people. I saw Michael Caine in Collins Quarter, dude. Yeah. That was insane. I was like, Michael Caine, you know, like I couldn't believe it. It was like we're actually right there.
I worked with John Cusack on a movie.
What movie?
It's on Netflix. It's called Blood Money.
Okay.
It's okay.
Okay. It was all right, dude.
He got caught on mic saying that he was down here just in Savannah working on some student film.
Oh boy. Well, dude, Cusack kind of gives no fucks. Dude,
He stole the four wheeler. Like he had a driver to like drive around his like cart or whatever. He's like, fuck that. He's like, I'm taking this four wheeler. Is it cool,
and
Transpo's just like, yeah, whatever, man.
Yo, man.
Cusack took the four wheeler. We're not going to stop him.
That fucking guy, he's a fucking jackal, dude. He's a badass motherfucker, man. He's like, used to hang out with Hunter S. Thompson. Like, and can you think about the things that guy has seen becoming famous in the 80s and all the crazy shit he did, saw, fucked this, that, snorted, whatever. And then, like resalvaged his career with, like, Gross Point Blank and High Fidelity.
God,
like,
fucking love Gross Point Blank.
Such probably a
the
good
best
movie,
Cusack
man.
Movie of all time.
High Fidelity, I think I'm just like.
I mean, High Fidelity is High Fidelity.
It's
but,
so, you know.
But no, Point Blank.
Amazing, dude. And, oh, dude, let's not.
His sister's in it. It's like the first
time. Of course, dude. And also, those Savage Steve Holland movies, Better Off Dead and One Crazy Summer, were fucking awesome in the 80s, dude.
Did you ever see Eight Heads in a Duffel Bag? Nothing to do with Cusack.
Absolutely. The Joe Pesci movie, of course, man. Yeah. I'm a cinephile, too, dude. I can go down all the. Yeah.
Eight Heads in a Duffel Bag. Yeah, it's a movie with Joe Pesci.
Yeah.
Makes sense, right?
Dude,
yeah, I know.
Pesci did a bunch of shitty movies, like, and it's, because, like, such a magnificent actor.
But it wasn't a shitty movie. It's actually a pretty good movie.
That's true.
It's a weird movie.
Yeah.
It's definitely a weird movie.
What did he do? The Super. That one was a real. That was a rough one. That was a rough one. I always confuse that in Life Stinks with Mel Brooks. I don't know why.
You know, I forgot to even mention this, but since we were talking about the theater and stuff, I have a movie on Amazon Prime called Odie, based on the Odyssey by Homer.
No shit.
Stoner comedy.
Awesome.
Odie stuck and lost in his apartment complex trying to get back to his apartment on his anniversary, right? But he went to go pick up some dabs, and then he just keeps going on in all these crazy situations trying to get back home to his girlfriend on his anniversary.
While his
roommate is hitting on her the whole time.
This is like an adult Home Alone. I just wanted to tie that right back in. This is good.
Get really high and watch Odie based on the Odyssey. It's a stoner comedy.
God, I think I'm going to have to do all of this today.
So
okay,
you know. But it, trust me, if you're not really high, you're just like, what the fuck is happening? But if you're really high, you're like, what the fuck is happening?
Trust me. Yeah, I fully believe you. Well, that's cool, man. Fuck yeah.
Good shit.
Absolutely. Good shit. Absolutely.
So you got a podcast.
I do have a podcast. Yeah. It's called What Brings Us Together. And I did it for a couple of years. We have about 52 or so episodes right now up on the podcast app. I don't think it's on Spotify, but I did it for a while. It's basically an interview show. I interview musicians. It's all about, like, you know, I'm a big fan of Bill Hicks, and, you know, after I really delved into him, it was like getting interested in those things of, like, what is the unifying thing between every person? And, like, you know, how, you know, what does bring people together? Is it music? Is it food? Is it sex? Is it drugs? Is it dogs. This or that? Is it dogs? It's anything, honestly. And so I did an interview show for a long time. And then I stopped for a while because one of my jobs sent me back to school to get my bachelor's. So there was no way I was going to, like, work, do that, and try to have a social life. So I put it on the back burner. And I just started. I'm actually, my first interview, we're redoing it. I have a producer named Angelo who's helping me in Detroit. And my first interview is tomorrow. I'm interviewing Larry Campbell, who was, Levon Helm's producer and Grammy Warning producer with Levon Helm in his band. And he played with Bob Dylan for 5 years. Played with Phil Lesh for a while. But I'm not talking about any of that stuff. I'm just talking about his time playing with a country musician named Doug Somm, who was in a band called the Sir Douglas Quintet. And then also... I had a solo career and then was also in a band with the Texas Tornadoes that was actually kind of popular towards the end of his life. And so cool. Larry is an incredible, he's a good, amazing guitar player.
So where do I get to hear that at?
That should be, because we haven't done it yet. It should be on the podcast app on What Brings Us Together. We're trying to work out how we're going to incorporate the old ones and the new ones and make them gel, because I think...
Same, you keeping the same name?
Yeah, yeah. And so,
which is what again?
What Brings Us Together.
What Brings Us Together.
What Brings Us Together.
Podcast.
Absolutely. It should be Brings Us Together, bringsustogether.com. That's, again, bringsustogether.com.
With an S. Brings us together.
Plural. But I'm still working out plural, all the kinks of
plural,
that.
Plural.
Sounds like that the on the copyrights for, like...
plural.
Tester.
But I'm psyched, man. I'm psyched to get it going. I mean, some of the old ones I interviewed... Demo. Let's see. Dave Drywitz, who's the bass player in Ween. I interviewed Mike Madison from the Tedeschi Trucks Band. I interviewed Mark Eibold from the band Pavement and Sonic Youth. And the upcoming ones are going to be Larry Campbell. I think Dave Drywitz is going to come back, hopefully. Jason Faulkner, I've done before, who was I mentioned before. So I don't know. I'm really excited about it. But now, honestly, the reason I'm doing it again is because, especially after the last couple of years in America, I'm sure we all know, have been a little crazy, let's say people aren't getting along so well. I think it's pretty fair to say. Yeah. And, you know...
We're working on it.
But, you know, especially during COVID and the lockdown and a lot of the Trump stuff and seeing how, you know, divisive the world was getting, I what are the things that can... You know, I really started bothering me when I noticed, like, I couldn't talk... People, if I disagree with you politically, you fucking don't like me and you don't want to talk to me. And I feel that way about people, too, sometimes. But it's kind of bullshit. I mean, it is, but it's not. You know?
It depends on how crazy they are.
I firmly agree. Like, if it's, like, racist bullshit, you can go fuck right off. Right, 100% agree. 100%
or if you're just queuing on me with some fucking psycho shit, totally, like, I'm not... But if you're a Republican who walks up to me and is like...
Dude.
Look, man, I like the traditional Republican thing.
Yes, I firmly agree.
Like maybe some small government. Yes. And like, you know, like, yes. I'm not 100% against abortion. Right. I just, you know, it's not for me, but like, you guys do whatever you want.
No, having differences is okay.
I think we should reduce the budget. Yeah. Like, you know, shit like that. Cool. We can talk about those things.
Yeah.
Those are reasonable attributes to government.
Completely
that
agree.
We can speak about.
Absolutely. No, when it's like, yeah, dude.
That's not what you run into most of the time.
No, and unfortunately it's not. And you know, but I guess the whole thing is like with the pot, it is trying to somehow get back to, okay, we might disagree, but like, let's say you and I both think that, Blood Sugar Sex Magic from the Red Hot Chili Peppers is the greatest album ever. And I do not think that. But let's just say that we do. Let's say that we do. And let's say we have opposing viewpoints. Well, let's talk about that. And then like from that, let's see where we can go. So initially the podcast, just to get my feet wet again, I'm going to talk to people about a specific thing. What brings us together? So Larry Campbell and I were talking about Doug Somm. That's what brought us together. Dave Drywitz, I've interviewed him already. We talked about Ween. We're not talking about that at all. We're going to talk about the Grateful Dead and why he plays in this very popular Grateful Dead cover band called Joe Russo's Almost Dead, and why the dead is important to him, you know. And so doing that, and then once that happens, I'm going to branch out to, okay, like I'm going to interview a friend of mine who's a pedal steel player, and he is a Republican and was a Trump supporter, and I'm not that.
But right? You're trying to bring them together.
So, okay, we both love country music. We both know that this is an incredible thing. Let's talk about that. But then, now that we know that there's this one thing, now let's try to somehow sew some shit together.
So since we went slightly political, I have a grand plan for a show that's called Common Ground.
Okay.
Where I have people come over and it's a potluck. Cool. Right? So everybody comes over and they make their dish.
Yeah.
Right. And then we all sit down at the table and we all eat together. And then we talk about politics while trying each other's food.
That's a good one.
Right.
Man.
So breaking bread.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's trying to be civil over dinner. Dude. Right. But like, you know, with people who are literally all from very different points of view.
Yeah. Yeah.
To sit down and try to do it without killing each other.
That's fantastic. No, okay. I would put that on the fast track, my friend, because we need that shit now. I mean, that's one of the great things about Anthony Bourdain. And like, he opened people's fucking brains up, man, to obviously to food, but also culturally sitting down and the meal thing. And like, I may think differently, but let's enjoy this thing. And that's fucking great, man. Right. You need to fast.
It's hard. It's a hard show to produce.
Of course it is.
First, you need people with opposing viewpoints that also will come over and cook for you.
Yeah.
And then actually have an intelligent conversation without killing each other.
Right. So, right. No. And well, there's the other.
But
problem.
I mean, that's like, where the drama is fun. So like, you know,
exactly. You're going to catch them crazy. I mean, there's definitely going to be a fuck you. And there's, you know, like slap the food out of the mouth.
Right. Common ground. Yeah. It's a potluck.
That's great.
It's a potluck political potluck show.
Yeah. I mean, there are definitely levels to how that's going to be complex.
Nobody steal that. It's mine. I said it. This is time stamped.
Okay. We're going to put this in the mail. We're going to send it to ourselves. So he is covered, everybody. It's legal tender.
Because, like, I mean, there are like simple as like climate change, right?
Sure.
So instead of like, it's fake or it's not fake.
Yeah.
How about pollution's gross?
Yeah.
Dead animals filled with plastic are gross. Can we all agree that these things are gross? So let's stop arguing whether or not, you know, it's fake, real or fake in these hyper parabolic like sides.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And just agree on the things that we can all agree on. Like, pollution is gross. Let's stop doing that.
Yeah. I agree. I think the only problem is many people, and I can't say I can't generalize, on the other side think, well, there has to be a certain amount of like, okay, so if 400,000 dogs died because of plastic, well, that had to happen for progress, which is bullshit. You and I both know it's bullshit.
Hey, it's totally
of course bullshit. It's bullshit. But like that
you could have found a better way. You just didn't try.
I firmly agree. And I think, unfortunately, a lot of these people, and it's equally as guilty on the left with where a lot of people are fed bullshit and don't wake up to things. But a lot of unfortunately, how people get their news is tragic. You know what I mean? And they're fed a narrative on both sides. And I
there's not really any good way to get news now.
No, I mean, David Cross said years ago, you know,
the Cronkite era is like
over. It's over. So, you know, I talk about this all the time. I read four things. I read NPR, and people say it's liberal. Those people can fuck themselves. That is one of those down the middle.
I catch NPR sometimes just being like, you're being a little too biased, but for the most part, NPR is what I listen to.
It's pretty up the middle, dude. Reuters is pretty up the middle. AP is pretty up the middle, and BBC News is pretty up the middle. Everything else is like really skewed, man. Like NPR is shockingly up the middle. I do understand, like, I don't know, but... And the Washington Journal, if you watch C-SPAN, I love that shit.
It's just not honest enough. Like, none of it is actually hard enough questions. And, you know, it's all just very soft. Even NPR is soft.
I totally agree.
Right? Like,
absolutely.
You're not asking the real question. Yeah. You know, you're giving us at least middle ground news, but you're not.
Yeah.
You're not fucking tough on it. Like,
yeah.
You're not really getting into the nitty gritty of the real shit, right?
Like, well, and unfortunately, because of like what happened in the last 4 years with how journalists were like just ejected from, I don't like that question, you're out. It's like, well, now that's not okay. That's not how it's supposed to work. But it's like, well, we're going to rewrite the game, motherfuckers. And well, when you do that, you have tyranny and you go fuck yourself. You know? I mean, like, but no, I, no, you're right, man. And where are the Woodwards and Bernsteins? Like, people have been asking that for years, you know?
Yeah,
like,
you know, because it's ratings. And if you're watching, you know, it's ratings. It's all ratings, ratings, ratings. So,
but maybe
how do I get in real news that doesn't have to do with ratings?
Maybe if you can do it in that weird Idiocracy plays and play to the fucking, play to all the goddamn momos and the, you know, like, you know, you, like ask the tough questions, but do it shirtless. You know, I'm just kidding. No, I don't know. I wish I had an answer, man. And like it's because journalistic integrity should be really important, but unfortunately it's not, you know, and
or it's just hard to disseminate.
True. Well, that's the other thing.
And that's the problem.
That's the other thing. Now that with disinformation, like the fucking water is muddied, so murky, and we
deep
can
fakes and
dude.
I mean, I can put my face on the Pirates of the Caribbean on an app.
Yep.
With my voice.
Yeah. With the voice thing is crazy.
So yeah. That makes it public and easy to do any of that nutball. Like,
I agree. And just,
but you know what's cool? We can have any celebrity endorsement we ever want.
That's true. And this episode has been brought to you by Kevin Spacey. Oh, not by Kevin Spacey.
Not Kevin Spacey.
By Kevin Bacon.
Yeah, so just click a button, switch it out. Kevin Bacon. Everybody loves Kevin Bacon. Nobody doesn't love Kevin Bacon.
Oh, God. You know?
Fuck you! Tremors.
God, I used to see him around New York a lot, actually, because he used to live on the Upper West Side. And like,
I mean, we're at the very least 7 people away from him right now.
Oh, of course. 100%. Very least. I know it's 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon. It's less.
It's only six?
It's less. No, six. It's definitely six. Yeah.
Six.
Yeah.
Okay, let's figure it out. Okay, so.
Okay. I mean.
Okay, so I have celebrities that we've met.
Oh, dude, I feel like we can do that in two.
Kevin Bacon was in. Well, let's start. Okay, so I've met multiple occasions the dude from Babe, the farmer.
I never saw Babe, the pig movie.
Yeah, good pig.
With awesome, directed by Savage Steve Holland, John Cusack. Okay,
you've never seen Babe? Oh, it's precious.
I mean, you know,
you should definitely see Babe.
Let me tell you, probably not.
You should definitely see Babe.
I'm gonna say
it's really good.
I appreciate it, but I'm gonna say it's highly unlikely.
All right, can we get John Cusack to Kevin Bacon?
Oh, 100. They probably worked in the same fucking movie together. Which one though? Without cheating. Now, okay, let's not cheat. Oh, yeah, of course you get from Cusack to Bacon. Well, okay, so think of the movie JFK is going to help us. Bacon was in JFK.
Everybody was in JFK.
Kevin Costner, John Candy. Okay, only those two people were JFK. Tommy Lee Jones.
Tommy Lee Jones.
Who's in Con Air with fucking John Cusack? I mean, everybody was in that, right? Like, so.
So we just got to get to.
They probably have worked.
Nick Cage. If we get to Nick Cage, then we got it.
Okay.
And that shouldn't be hard.
No, Nick Cage was in what with Kevin Bacon?
This is hilarious. It's harder than you think.
It is harder. You know, but you know,
without using the internet.
You know, the fucked up thing is people listening will be like, oh, it's half a movie.
Please comment and tell us that you got there.
Yeah, I'm sure it's so obvious. I just, you know, I'm not thinking clearly.
Right now. Miserably.
Did.
I had my second birthday on Jimmy Buffett's couch. Does that get us closer?
Can you please tell how that happened?
My mom was friends with the maid.
Okay.
And he lived like diagonal from his house in Woody Creek, Colorado.
Okay.
Which is also where Hunter S. Thompson.
Dude, you lived in Woody Creek? That's so cool.
I used to hitchhike with my mom when I was 3 years old with my big toe.
Uh-huh.
So I was barefoot. And she probably was too. Or wearing Birkenstocks. I don't know if they had Birkenstocks then.
Did you ever see him around? Did you ever see Hunter S. Thompson like around?
Oh, I don't know. I was three.
Okay. So you moved. Okay.
Yeah. But I had my second birthday on Jimmy Buffett's couch. He lived diagonal from us. He wasn't home, but I did yell at him in a Margaritaville one time. I'm sorry about the stain on your couch. But
that's very funny.
He didn't hear me. He was too busy singing Margaritaville.
So you know what's interesting? I mean, so
true story.
That's cool. That's a cool one. So I didn't realize that he lived in Woody Creek. Thompson lived in Woody Creek. Nicholson lived in Aspen, which wasn't too far. So can you think of the party thing that was the amounts of cocaine that were consumed
and hallucinogens in the mountains? Man. Right?
I didn't realize that Buffett hung out with Thompson as much as he did, but he did, and yeah, pretty interesting.
He sold the house after him and that wife got divorced.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So I have an interesting story. I was almost, I this is how I phrase it to people, but it's not entirely true. I tell people I was almost adopted by Carly Simon. And well, so I half grew up on the Upper West Side. My mom lived on 75th Street between Amsterdam and Columbus for years and years. And when I was eight, her and my stepdad went into this store and I was like sitting outside. I was eight. I probably looked like a scruffy shitbag. And I was sitting on the ground just sitting there looking around, and this woman comes up to me. She's like, hey, are you homeless, or do you live here, or are you waiting for someone? And I was like, oh, I'm waiting for someone. And I, again, I'm a crazy music person and have been even at that age. I knew who that was. You know, like, that's crazy.
It's Carly Simon.
Yeah. And so I look up and I was like, oh, no, I'm waiting for someone. And she was like, okay. And then just walked away. And it was as my parents were coming outside, and my mother, who didn't know I knew who that was like, do you know who that was? I was like, Carly Simon? Yeah. So, and apparently she used to, like, she wouldn't adopt kids, but she would, like, foster them for a while if she found them on the street and then get them a home. So, I was almost fostered by Carly Simon.
Yeah. So
not a bad
close.
Not a bad, I was so close. So yet close. So far. Terribly far.
Man, if you're listening, Carly, you could add this fine gentleman as a stepdad.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, think about it. I've got a lot to offer, Carly. Mm-hmm. Right? I know about.
You could have been his mom.
Yeah. I know. You could have.
You missed out on years of his life. There's still time to reconnect.
Anytime you want, Carly. I'm here for you. Okay.
Ryan's here for you.
How many people you think had their first like serious crush on Carly Simon from that one? I don't know if you know. There's that one album cover of her where like it's clearly no bra and nipple, and it's like 74. Had to be super risque. Yeah. Uh-huh. Like, and she's very attractive. Like, I can't even imagine how many people like were first like crush. Would steal that, yeah. Run to the bathroom, and feverishly masturbate.
A lot of
like,
uncle. There's a lot of uncles out there.
A lot. Yeah. No
cousins,
shit.
Uncles and cousins.
Yeah. Did so?
I was too young for that.
No, yeah. No. I mean, me too. Same. But Madonna, I feel like,
Madonna, I think. Was
same. Like yeah, we're in the ballpark. Yeah, same thing. But I think for those people that were probably born in like 65, you know, in that period, mm-hmm. you know, had to be you know, just crazy about Carly Simon. Crazy about Carly Simon. So yeah. You're kind of a music guy, too, as far as a fan, right? You have a pretty good music brand. Right?
I don't keep up with anything new. Okay. I'm real bad at modern
music.
But
you like a lot of stuff. So did you have a person in your life, like an uncle or somebody that got you into stuff, or...? Uncle, the guy at the record store.
No, I mean, my dad's, yeah. You know, riding in the car with him, listening to the Beach Boys.
Yeah, fuck yeah, man.
My parents, you know, a lot of classic rock. My mom's a Parrothead. Jimmy Buffett. You know.
That's so awesome. Wait, so your mom was, you had your second birthday on his couch, and your mom was also a fan.
Yeah.
Interesting. Did she befriend the
maid? I don't know if she was a fan before living there or not. I'll ask her. She's on the podcast, so I'll ask her next time.
So I actually got into a pretty intense verbal argument about Jimmy Buffett with a guy in Savannah a couple years ago. I was pro. And because I actually think Come Monday is a magnificent song.
Oh, it's a good song.
A great song.
There's a lot of great songs.
I agree.
There's some really bad songs.
There's some really bad ones.
There's some really bad, but there's some really good ones.
And also, I mean, the fact, I respect the shit out of that guy because he basically took Margarita and Cheeseburger in Paradise and turned it into like a $1 billion industry. Like how the, plus like as a,
right? Look at that cross marketing.
That's crazy, man. Like, it took him 2 decades to do it, but he fucking did it. And like, mm-hmm. I mean, he lives in a castle or probably many castles, many places all over the world, right? So there's that. And also, having done that, and if you listen to Cheeseburger in Paradise, as one who has been in music and audio and done drugs, there is no question that man did a ton of cocaine before he sang that song. Because he's so nasally, and in comparison to his other vocal performances, it's like that dude, and I'm sure Jimmy Buffett would be like, well, yeah, I did. Like, no doubt. No doubt about it.
My mom used to put on Cheeseburger in Paradise to piss us off as kids.
Oh,
like in the car. Like if we were like all arguing or something, she'd just turn on Cheeseburger in Paradise and turn, because that would make us mad at her.
Yeah.
So we would stop fighting with each other and we'd just tell her to fuck off and turn that goddamn song off.
Dude, that song, like,
but I do love the song.
It's a great, it's
nostalgia.
Exactly. I think you remember that scene in Boogie Nights when Mark Wahlberg is singing like, "You got the touch," like that really cheesy thing.
Fire!
You got the power. And like, oh, it's great. So but I envision Jimmy Buffett's experience being something like that in the studio. He walks in and is like, "Let it roll, boys. We're just going to do this. All right, here we go." You know, had to be something like that. There's no way it wasn't that.
Jimmy, write us in the comments. Let
please,
us know.
Jimmy, please just let me know that that's what Jimmy's like. Yeah, it was.
So just a thumbs up will be fine. Just
we can deal with that, Jim. Yim. But no, Buffett, he gets shit on, man, and it's bullshit. And he's great. Yeah, so awesome. I do think like, just similar to Hotel California, and I love the fucking Eagles, that Margaritaville is severely overplayed, but a very good song.
Severely overplayed.
So, yeah.
Just I'm more of a fan of Pirate Looks at 40.
Great one.
Mother Ocean's
good. Oh, dude, Boat Drinks.
Boat Drinks.
Fins,
Coconut Telegraph.
Oh, you deep dive. Okay. All right.
I mean, we get, like, probably the worst bad song is, like, that freaking Volcano fucking song.
Oh yeah,
we're in the volcano.
Oh, but you know what though? You go to see Jimmy Buffett live, and I have not seen him yet. I want to see. No,
I actually that true story about Margaritaville and yelling at him like up to the stage. Like,
oh really?
You know, yeah, like sorry about standing on your couch, Jimmy.
Oh,
but like he obviously
meant you were in a Margaritaville and saw him.
No, I was at a Margaritaville concert.
That's cool, yeah. Man. Yeah. What's the deal with those? Did you ever watch that documentary on Parenthood?
Well, I used to live not too far from Buckeye Lake.
What's that?
In Ohio, which is like a concert space too. And so, and it also has a lake, and he used to own like a house there too.
Oh.
And so he used to spend a lot of time just on Buckeye Lake.
I only found out about that because of that Parrotheads documentary that was really, really interesting, came out a couple years ago. And it really convinced me that somewhere around the age of 55, I'm going to quit whatever I'm doing and start touring from North Carolina.
I actually have a lot of close connection with Jimmy Buffett.
Dude, no, clearly it sounds that way. But you know, there are people who are like not Jimmy Buffett who play music basically from North Carolina all the way down Florida up through the, you know, the Gulf. And can make like $200,000 a year playing in bars, like playing
just
like
playing
that
songs.
Kind of shit. Like either Buffett covers or like trop rock. They call it trop rock.
Right.
And it's like, Dude, that sounds kind of awesome. I could wear a Hawaiian shirt and wear flip-flops, smoke weed.
Whenever me and my sister get together, like, and there's a guitar around, we sing Jimmy Buffett songs. Because
they're so easy and they're great. And we know all
the words. Ooh, favorite. One of my favorite is the Little Station Hold Up. And then also...
Dude, you're going even over my head, then, man. That's good, man.
Because that great Little Station Hold Up will cost me 2 good years. Rough to Santa
Claus. I don't think I know that one. Soft.
No reward on no poster. Or no picture on so no poster. Exciting. No reward and no bail. And no.
Dude, no. Yeah. You know what, man? If you come see me play when I play at Seawolf, I'm going to do Come Monday for you.
And then the other one is the shoplifting one. Another shoplifting one where they go into the store and like, we grabbed $15. No, shit, that's not it. Oh, there's another one though.
I don't, dude. You far surpassed me in Jimmy Buffett.
My mom's a Parrothead.
That's awesome, dude. That's awesome. Oh, what I was gonna say before, those communities that are like Jimmy Buffett retirement communities. That shit's in
Florida. There's one here
in Georgia or in Savannah.
In South Carolina. My buddy Nate was in town, and we were looking for a dog park, and there was a dog park in a Margaritaville community. Dude. And so we didn't realize. We just thought it was like, and they're like, oh, sweet, and they called it like, I don't know, some cheesy like. Margarita,
Jimmy Buffett related name
for the dog park. But we got there and we're like, well, we just want to go to the dog park. And the lady's like, no, you got to live here. And we're like, what the? This is a whole like Margaritaville.
Yeah. I mean, the fact, again, the song has turned into that.
There's an entire community of like nice micro mansion houses.
Absolutely.
Like,
you, dude,
like, in a Margaritaville gated community.
Dude, there's beer. There are restaurants. 30 there's minutes gated from here. Communities. Oh, that, no, okay. First of all, we might need to take a. I need to see this.
So, not kidding.
But like, yeah, like the, anybody that can like move their, like can brand something like that is like, it's like beyond brilliant. Like, it's beyond brilliant. And it's very few people, you know, the Grateful Dead are fascinating and have like an empire based on this thing that nobody, like anyone who can do things, something like that is just mind boggling to me.
Sell a lot of t-shirts.
A lot of t-shirts.
I haven't even tried to sell t-shirts yet. Do people really buy other people's t-shirts?
100%. You should definitely get some merch.
Get some merch. Good merch.
Merch is important.
Merch is key.
So I'm actually just about to start doing the merch for Seawolf Lone Wolf. Rounding it back in, and yeah, like you, the more creative, and you got a good brain, man. You can get some fun stuff in there, man. It was great.
I actually make there's a website that you can just embed into your website for all the products, and it's super called. Oh, I'll tell you later because cool. I don't remember what it's called.
Yeah, let me know, man. Yeah,
but it's super simple, and then it looks like your shop. So you know, a lot of them like don't integrate into your website to like make you feel like you're shopping on the. But it actually.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, it's not Squarespace. No,
it's.
No, tell me later.
I'll have to look. Okay. Yeah. Anyway, I think we got to wrap her up here. But
dude, I feel like we talked for 8 minutes.
I know. Time flies and you're having fun, baby.
Woo! Yeah. Well, thank you so much, man. I really appreciate it.
No, man. Thanks for being here. And I hope you get to learn a lot about the service industry in your new endeavor in life.
I'm feeling it, man. Yeah. And
you got a whole world ahead of you, bud.
I'm sure, man. And yeah.
Lots of things that you don't even know yet.
I'll bet.
Coming your way.
Yeah, please.
Mostly from customers.
Wolf. Yeah. Oh, no. I can't wait for
people are crazy.
No shit.
So I wish you the best.
I appreciate that, man. And please come to Lone Wolf and Seawolf in Savannah. And my name is Ryan Scamenti. I play some music. I also have a country band we'll be playing this summer called the Intracoastal Playboys, playing only classic country songs.
Which is a badass name.
Thank you, dude. I appreciate that. We do only 1950 to 1980 country music, only in that span, except, as we talked about, one Ween song called Help Me Scrape the Mucus Off My Brain. At the moment, we'll see. But
you piss up a rope, too.
I will. You know what, man? We might work that out at some
point. Work it in. All right, Ryan. So well, thank you for hanging out. Cheers.
Appreciate it, man.
Please go like and follow us on Instagram at Independent Lasagna or Beyond the Check, as well as Facebook at Independent Lasagna and Beyond the Check. And go watch my fucking show on Amazon Prime and write it a review if you like it, because I hear it's pretty good.
It's pretty awesome. I'm going to say it's pretty awesome.
And look out for season 2. This guy will be in it.
Woo!
Woo! Woo! And love you. Cheers.
Bye, guys.